Hello, everyone. A very warm welcome to all our listeners to the Big Unlock podcast, season 7. My name is Ritu M. Oberoi, and I'm the managing partner here at Big Rio Demo, and I will be your co-host along with Rohit for today's episode. We are really excited and honored to have Dr. Heather Varej from ARPA-H on our podcast today. Dr. Varej is a cardiologist, researcher, and one of medicine's most compelling contemporary writers, known for bringing humanity, history, and philosophy into conversations about health and illness. Dr. Varej joined ARPA-H as a program manager in December 2024. And ARPA-H is the Advanced Research Projects Agency for Health, which supports the development of high-impact solutions to society's most challenging health problems. And he's previously been a faculty member at Harvard Medical School, at Brigham Women's Hospital, and director of the Heart Failure Program. And he's written 3 great books, which are available on Amazon, and over 175 peer-reviewed papers. So really happy to have him here with us. And we'll ask Rohit for a short introduction, and then it's all yours, Dr. Varej.
Hi, everyone. I'm Rohit Mahajan. I'm the CEO of Big Rio and also the co-host of the Big Unlock podcast. Very happy to be here. Over to you, Heather.
Well, it's my pleasure to be here, Ritu. Rohit, we first met at HIMSS, and I know we've been meaning to speak since then. Lots of exciting stuff happening in the health technology space. So excited to dig in.
Great. So let's get started. So we all know that ARPA-H was created to tackle these, you know, ambitious, seemingly intractable challenges with a very different risk tolerance than the traditional research funding. So based on your experience there so far, which healthcare problems do you believe are truly moonshot worthy? And do you think we're really being bold enough in the questions that we're asking today, or we're still like kind of not able to explore the entire potential of AI so far, like still being cautious?
Well, I mean, I think to create a thriving funding infrastructure, you need a variety of payers and a variety of funders who can really tackle different pieces of the different bottlenecks in the market. You know, certainly you need an agency like NIH, which is, has broad scale and is going to have, and much of the progress that NIH makes will be realized in over decades, if not longer. But also at the same time, certainly you have, you know, the private funders, especially in the AI space, play a huge role as well in supporting breakthroughs and teams that are really promising. And ARPA-H is, I think, is also now, there was a gap in the field. There was a gap in that there really wasn't any federal research funding agency that was focused on health that could take big swings, that could turn things around pretty quickly, that was metrics and milestones based, and that had the risk tolerance to be able to take on areas and topics that incremental progress is never going to get you through those. And that which really were of really, I think it's fair to say, of national interest, at least for the United States, but also creating common good for the rest of the world. I think our agency director, Dr. Alicia Jackson, she has highlighted and outlined some of the key priorities for the agency. Certainly one of them includes winning the biotech race. I think longevity and aging and reversing aging remains an area that has a lot of potential to be able to really transform health span for people around the world, defeating devastating diseases, and also focused on taking a platform approach, especially when it comes to AI. And within AI, our major investment, we have many different programs that are approaching this from many different angles. But the program I'm leading is called the Advocate Program. And the vision of the Advocate Program is really to bring AI to the bedside, bring generative and agentic AI that can essentially do everything a clinician can over the phone, and bring that through the regulatory pathway so that that can really open up this entire field for everyone, but do so in a way that's not just fast, but also done well, because of just how important this field is, how critical it is for us to get it right. And I think that the response that the agency has had to not just this program, but to many programs, I think is a testament to just how, I think, important it was, it always was, to have us be as part of this ecosystem.
Thank you for that, Dr. Varej. But I think I just wanted to get a little deeper into the speed at which, you know, AI is moving. We all saw what happened with Mythos. And I'm saying, like, when you take on a project, maybe even like Advocate, you know, if you have a month or a 6-month horizon, but everything is going to change like in a week, then how do you kind of keep up and think that far ahead?
That's a great question. And I think it's actually what makes developing a government-funded AI program very difficult because making the case for how, even though you're fast, you still have timelines and you still have projections. And even sometimes the most ambitious projections in this field, given how fast it's moving, you can become obsolete very quickly. So, but those are things that I've been thinking about very deeply. Others at the agency have been thinking about deeply. And I think that's what makes the AI space a little bit more challenging when it comes to developing programs. So here's how I've approached it. One is, I think there's a reason Advocate is focused on the most highest risk AI and in the most regulated space. So within, I think it's fair to say that there's already so much integration of AI across healthcare, but it's mostly in low risk settings. Ambient scribe technology has taken off. I think next few years, clinical decision support is going to transform how clinicians interface with the healthcare system. But Advocate was really focused on developing a patient facing technology. So that already puts you in a high risk category, but also higher reward. And then being able to do really high capability functions such as making a diagnosis autonomously, being able to perform triage, being able to close the loop by actually providing the treatment and prescribing the treatment directly back to the patient. And then going through the regulatory pathway where there's really no precedent for technology like this. And then in addition, we also focused on a relatively high risk population, which is patients with heart failure, because in part, you know, ARPA-H believes that if you can create a demonstration that is so ambitious, then it really opens up the field for anyone downstream of that as well. The reverse doesn't happen. So I think Advocate has a lot of the features of what it takes to actually be able to develop a program that's going to remain relevant with the types of timelines that we see in this field. I think the other thing that's really important is, and I tell people all the time, is that if you're developing an AI program and if it doesn't sound insane to you, you're going to get scooped, right? Someone is going to get ahead of you, because if what you're doing sounds feasible today, you're already a few steps behind. So a lot of the work that we're developing for the future, I mean, talking about it today, you'd think that, you know, you'd want to put me in a hospital because you think this guy is like off the rocker. But I think that that is the sort of ambition that we need to approach this technology with, because so far it has delivered and if not exceeded on expectations.
Great. But then, you know, how do you reconcile these two things, this very supersonic speed of development versus the regulated pathways, which are still stuck, and, you know, you come up against that wall. And if it's going to take months to approve something, then you're fallen behind again eventually. Yep.
That is one of the reasons why I think an agency like ARPA-H should really, we work very closely with the regulator. FDA has never had a partner like ARPA-H before. They've never had a partner in government like ARPA-H before that can make major investments, that can work, that can really make sure that the problems that we're fixing are problems that are going to help the regulators as well, rather than just impede their work or get in the way. So that partnership, I think, is really, really crucial. I do think that a lot of regulatory unlocks often are bureaucratic issues where there's a sense of you need X number of patients, you need this type of margin, you need this type of enrollment. In the AI space, when it comes to the regulatory blockers, a lot of them are just technical. A lot of them are, we just don't have the technology that can do what this technology needs. For example, one of the most important parts of the Advocate program is not just that we're supporting the development of these technologies that are going to be classified as medical devices by the FDA, but also we are supporting and funding evaluation technology for post-market monitoring. We're calling this the supervisory agent or the supervisory layer that is going to be developed essentially at the same pace with the same types of resources, if not more, so that we are actually creating the entire infrastructure together, rather than doing it in sequence, we're doing it in parallel, because we understand that the traditional timelines and pathways are just not going to work for this type of technology. So if you're going to be relevant from an evaluation perspective, if you're going to be relevant as a body that can actually administer regulations on this space, you need that type of support, and it has to be technical support. We have to have a way to really funnel and focus the best minds and the best teams in the world on the problems that we think are going to really help unlock this field. And that's one of the things that ARPA-H can do. And that's why I think working with the regulator, making sure that we are keeping their perspective centered on this so that we create solutions that are in agreement with their strategy and how they're looking at the world, I think is going to be critical. And we plan to keep doing that in the future.
Great. So I'll ask one more question and then I'll give Rohit a chance. I think the most interesting thing I picked up from, you know, your conversation so far was that what the Advocate program that you're working on is patient facing. And that's really interesting. So when you're talking about this level of, you know, new technology where you said it has to actually sound insane or crazy, then how do you kind of bring it to people who might not be ready for it or who
for
might
sure. Yeah. So that's a great question, right? I mean, so there are two things. One is that when you start with something, you have to have an ambitious vision, but you also need to be able to scope it, right? You need to be able to say that, you know, what is a really specific problem that I want to work on? So instead of saying that the teams at Advocate Support are going to build like AI cardiologists, what we're focused on is, can you develop a technology that uses generative and agentic AI, but improves outcomes in patients with heart failure? So that immediately scopes a problem. You define who the population is, and then what are the endpoints you're focused on? What's going to go on your label? How are you going to design it? How are you going to deliver it? So I think scoping is very important. I think for this field, communication is also very important. How you talk about this technology, I would say it's much more important in the AI space than almost any other space, because I do feel like people really care about this. This is not one of those fields that is working in the corner and it's just, you know, it's doing its thing. This is, everyone is looking at this technology as being something that could really transform in society, healthcare, any industry that you can think of, that is obviously causing a lot of excitement, but it's also causing, as you might imagine, some anxiety and nervousness. And I think that there's also a risk that tools that are not well developed could actually add more friction to the system. They could actually, you know, our health system doesn't have a lot of buffer. It doesn't have a lot of give. And so straining it further with technology that's not well designed or doesn't have the patient or the clinician's best interest in mind could really be catastrophic. So I do think that how we talk about this technology and how that is reflected in the design of these technologies is really, really important to really get the market ready for this technology. I think it's clear that the technology, that the tech is ready, the market needs more time, but the market also needs to see things that it feels are familiar. For example, clinicians take risks all the time with new technology, but oftentimes like new implantable devices, you know, things that go in your heart, right? New type of mechanical pump that if the slightest malfunction could lead to a patient's death. New drugs, new chemotherapies, new genetic therapy. So we're taking risk all the time with new, but there's a sequence to what we see before we take that risk. Oftentimes that includes clinical trials, that includes FDA authorization. There's a precedent to what we need to see as a community to be able to take on risks that we believe the benefits will exceed the risk for the population that we use it for. And I think that's really what at least the first generation of clinical AI technologies need to be able to do. So when we're talking about patient-facing technologies, I think the bar there is going to be, and I think it is fair to argue, should be the same as what you'd expect for a new high-risk medical device or new drug or chemotherapy. But once I think we have that, once we have that sort of foundational evidence, I think that that then really will cause a seismic shift in how these technologies are accepted, how they're implemented, how they're deployed. And that's one of the core sort of theses of the Advocate program, is that it is using a very, even though the technology that it uses is very frontier, you know, agentic AI for clinical care, supervisory agents for real-time post-market monitoring, et cetera. When you look at how we're evaluating this technology, super traditional, right? We have single-site deployments, we have human factors research, we have IDE studies, multi-center trials. I think outcomes that people understand, heart failure hospitalizations, guideline-directed medical therapy, mortality. So we've chosen to innovate in the technology, but we've kept the evaluation as familiar as possible, because again, I think that that is the sort of evidence that people are used to seeing as they adopt new technologies. But once you have that foundational knowledge, I think that's going to be what this field really needs to, you know, reach its next exponent.
Great answer. Thank you. Now I'll give Rohit a turn to ask some questions.
Yeah, thank you, Ritu. So hi there. Yeah, I was making some notes, really interesting insights, you know, and I especially like the comment that you made that FDA never had a partner in government like ARPA-H. Like, that's fantastic, because I think regulatory hurdles have to be surmounted quickly. So where I would like to ask you is that in your Advocate program, tell us a bit more about the time horizons for the projects, the funding size, the number of projects per year or whatever, cycles you follow. That is one part of my question either. Second, that, and you can take any which one first, is tell us a bit about your story, like what attracted you to healthcare and RPIH, what you're looking in the future.
So from a timeline perspective, Advocate Program was launched in January. We solicited solution summaries from teams for each of the technical areas. These were focused on the development, evaluation, and implementation of clinical agentic AI, patient-facing for patients with heart failure. And this is a standard process for every RPH program. Then we encourage teams to send full proposals. And from them, there we make decisions about who we recommend for funding. And then our hope is that we should be able to announce the teams that we are selecting in a couple of months. I think sooner rather than later. So that is programmatically where we are from that perspective. With regards to the funding amount, so these are contracts, not grants, and the typical RPIH program is usually between $50 to $150 million. Having said that, I think the value that this program was always created to provide value that you can't simply count in dollars. And here, I think the focus from my perspective has really been on, obviously, everyone loves money, and money is great, especially if it's non-dilutive, but I think that if you're going to make a dent in the AI space, money alone cannot be it, because there's plenty of money to go around. So really thinking about how are we creating value? How are we creating something important and that's valuable, in which we're really leaning into our strengths as a government agency? Therefore, focusing really on the regulatory aspect was one that was really important. Implementation, how do you get health systems to be excited about this technology in which they are? There's a lot of unknowns about how these will work, and there's going to be a lot of attention in this space. There's a lot of uncertainty, but healthcare systems wanted a partner like us who they felt they could trust as being a mediator or a convener of some of the best technology companies to come in and build these solutions. And then access to data, and access to data that is going to help determine, how well these technologies are developed and then how well they work after they've been deployed. Our goal for the teams is that we want them to have a technology ready to go to FDA for market authorization within 2 years of the program starting. Why 2 years? 1 year felt too short, 3 years felt too long. So we settled on two. And then after that, we plan to do a multi-center trial of the highest performing technologies in an integrated health system to look at clinical outcomes, but really focused on how do you implement this technology in clinical practice. So those are some of the timelines and details about the program. We hope to be able to share more over the next few months so we can be much more specific then. With regards to me, so I know Ritu is in Delhi. I grew up not far from her, but across the border in Pakistan, and I went to medical school there. I really approached writing as a storyteller, as a writer first, and that informed my research, that informed my clinical career. Moved to Boston for residency after finishing medical school in Pakistan, did fellowship in cardiology, was recruited, had the great opportunity to join the FDA as a senior advisor for chronic disease to the FDA commissioner. And that really brought everything in sync for me, helping me provide that regulatory perspective and really helped me sort of figure out what the critical bottlenecks are going to be, but also to understand, create a sort of common lexicon or language or that works for technologists, that works for private investors, that works for academics, health systems, and that certainly needs to work for the regulator. So just a bit about me. And as you said at the top, I have been at the agency since almost a year and a half, and it's been really exciting.
Thank you, Heather, for sharing that. Yeah, I have a question on what you talked about, the funding cycle and the focus area. Is that going to, so that's for this year, let's say, and I guess the application cycle is already closed for the current year. Are you following January through December, and will the next cycle open in next year, January, just for the listeners to know?
So with regards to the Advocate Program, that sort of opening has closed, and so we'll be able to make awards. So the times really starts when we can get all our teams on contract. That's basically day zero of the program, if you may.
Yeah.
And we're hoping that that is coming up soon for us. And I think overall, it's fair to say things are going great. Having said that, the way that RPH works is that program managers are actually expected to then develop new programs. Once they've helped launch a program and then create a new program, almost one every year, that ideally should be related to or to the thesis that is being developed and that builds on that. And so I foresee and I'm hopeful that you'll see that, our team is going to be coming out with more programs similar to Advocate, but that build on it and really help extend the impact that it can have across the field. and take more shots on goal, more different approaches, because I feel like I think it's fair to say that you're going to need to have many different ways. This is too big to fail. So you can't have one program only that's trying to unlock the field. Teams are also welcome to send their ideas to ARPA-H and connect with ARPA-H program managers. I would say that that process is very competitive, and it really depends on finding sort of the right idea, the right risk space, the right team. But that's another opportunity that exists to engage with ARPA-H, and that's always open, in which teams can pitch their ideas. Oftentimes, it requires some feedback and back and forth to get them ready to make sure that it would be a good fit. But both of those opportunities, so the investigator-initiated projects, if you may, and then agency and program manager-initiated programs, I think are the major ways that there's always work that needs to be done, and there's always new opportunities coming up.
Amazing. That's great. Okay.
I think we can squeeze in one last question. So I would like to ask that you seeing this field so up close and you really touch with the teams which are like telling you about this future of healthcare innovation. So I'll flip the question and ask you, which emerging technology do you think is receiving, you know, more attention than it deserves? Like, why is everybody like kind of focused on that when there's so many other things we should be looking
at? Oh, man. My paradoxical answer is probably AI. What I will say is that I think AI is receiving the appropriate type of attention, but there's still the real gaps that we need to focus on. I think how these technologies are evaluated, especially for high-risk technologies, I think real-time evaluation is going to be incredibly important. I think AI alignment is a space that I think is really important, which is, you know, how do we align AI outputs with the preferences and taste and values of humans, not just as groups, but as individuals. This is incredibly important in healthcare, as I think another space that I think needs more attention. I think AI that's made specifically for the populations that live with the most need, which is mostly older people, people with multiple comorbidities, people with, you know, cognitive dysfunction, sensory issues, et cetera. And the elderly, I think that's developing tools that are validated for that population where we think we can have the most benefit. I think that's a space that I think needs more attention. And lastly, I think one of the spaces that I'm really interested in is that I really think that we have finally come to a point where we have the models, where we have the data, we have the compute to really be able to develop high fidelity simulations for healthcare. If you look at every other field, whether that's manufacturing, supply chain, logistics, transportation, defense, climate, you know, simulation is a huge part of those fields. And it remains essentially non-existent in healthcare. And part of that is because healthcare is hard, it's complicated. Our data is messy. We have data streams. We have humans who act irrationally. We have patients who have their own complex physiologies, pathologies, et cetera. There's so much complexity in healthcare that attempting to develop real simulations that can capture that complexity has been essentially impossible until now. So that is another space that I believe is very exciting and has real potential in transforming how we value technologies, how do we develop them, and can hopefully shorten development cycles and implementation cycles too.
Great. Thank you.
Anything, Haider, you would like to talk about to close out on any one of your books that you wrote recently, or what was the last one that anything you're working on or that you just...
I can talk about the last book. I will say that, you know, before joining government, I had written 3 books over 5 years. And in some ways, joining the government was my retirement from writing in a way. I did feel like I wanted to take a break and I wanted to be. But my last book was focused on chronic pain, part because from a science perspective, it's an incredibly interesting phenomenon. From a medical perspective, I practiced at the height of the opioid epidemic in the United States. Mm-hmm. But from a personal perspective, I'd lived with chronic pain. I'm all good now. But for many, many years, I'd lived with chronic pain myself. And so I combine all of these sort of various things into being able to really tell the story of something that I think all of us experienced. This was a book called Song of Our Scars. It was published, I don't know, maybe 21, but before I joined government. So yeah, so that's the most recent one. But it's been a while, but now I think I will say that a lot of the work that we do at ARPA-H is very similar to writing a book. I didn't think it would be, but you know, having a plan, having an outline, having a vision, and then putting the pieces together, talking to people, doing research, iterating, editing, and it's a very creative process too, coming up with programs. It's a collaborative effort. So unexpectedly, even though I thought I'd retired from writing, so much of what I learned when I was writing books has really been very applicable when it comes to developing programs and working with this amazing ecosystem.
Awesome.
Thank you, Dr. Varech. It's been a pleasure having you on our podcast. Thank you so much for joining.
Thank you. Appreciate it.